This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by mmcomfortsystems.com. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
Well, today was kind of predictably crazy in the Rittenhouse trial. The jury just ended their second day of deliberations after they watched some videos. But it's a video in particular that caused some significant issues that led to the defense yet again motioning for a mistrial because video was withheld. That is the argument. Video that if they had, at least at the quality that was now provided, they would have used considerably more to make the case that Kyle Rittenhouse is not guilty of anything other than perhaps bad judgment in going to Kenosha, even though he did, in fact, have ties via his father who lives there. I know people want to pretend that that wasn't the case. He crossed state lines. I can't believe he would cross state lines. I mean, granted, it's 20 miles away from where he lives, but I can't believe it. How dare he? And so the attorneys who originally motioned for a mistrial with prejudice last week, arguing that this is a prosecutor in Thomas Binger who is just purposefully violating norms and procedures, they're now saying that the prosecution gave them a compressed version of the video that they used that was not as clear as the video that they actually had access to. Now, they're saying on their end it was some kind of technical glitch. The prosecution is saying we had a video that was compressed when it was transferred from an iPhone to an Android. But that doesn't matter because during the early portion of the trial, when they're doing the discovery, you're supposed to turn all of this over. And they did not. When they clearly had it, because they had it today. And so the judge is taking that into consideration. He did not immediately rule on the mistrial request. And it's possible, and we'll talk about this with Cash Patel later on in the show. Cash Patel, former prosecutor, who can take us through how these motions generally work. But it's possible that the judge is just waiting for the jury to come up with their own mind. He can rule on a mistrial and say we're ruling in favor of the mistrial with prejudice, which means you can't retry this case. He can do that after the jury weighs in. That would be controversial. 100% will be controversial because the left, understanding that their narrative on this has been a total flop, and so now they're going after the judge. No matter what the jury decides, if it's mixed at all, they're going to say, oh, we would have gotten a full conviction if not for this racist judge. Racist against who? I'm not sure. We keep getting told that this is an example of why the justice system is racist. It's a system of oppression. You've got this white nationalist in Kyle Rittenhouse who shot, three white people. Not entirely sure how that's an example of white supremacy, but this judge is racist against who? I have no idea. And yet we're told that this judge is racist. Oh, okay. Got it. Racist against white people. So is the argument then that Kyle Rittenhouse truly is not getting a fair shake? Anyone who looks at, and I mean anyone with any semblance of intellectual honesty, anyone who looks at this evidence knows that Kyle Rittenhouse was not the aggressor. And now, by the way, you have crystal clear video showing he's not the aggressor. And yet still, you have people like Joy Reid, who is a racist, who says evil things with the intent of causing harm, trying to create some kind of race war. She's been trying to do this since George Floyd. I made that point last night on Fox News. She's out there with the most obscene and just frankly stupid rhetoric.
It's stunning, Katie. This feels like those cases in the 1950s where it was in and out, somebody, white male, killed someone and they were in and out fast and acquitted. That's how it feels.
That's how it feels. Well, you don't know what it is you're talking about if that's how it feels. It's unclear whether or not you don't know what you're talking about historically or whether or not you don't know what you're talking about now. Something tells me, period, you don't know what it is you're talking about. She wrote on Twitter about this case as to whether or not it will tell us if armed, primarily white men can be judge, jury, and executioner. Oh, okay. Interesting. She says that the day after the QAnon shaman gets 3 years in prison for a nonviolent offense. He should be punished, there's no doubt. But it's just interesting timing. Joy Reid wants to get you to fight with each other. Joy Reid is the one who wants people to hate white men as much as she does. And while she pushes this rhetoric, while she tells you to go to war with one another, while she tries to inflame tensions needlessly, you will suffer the consequences, and she'll enjoy it from her luxury, secure, guarded condo in New York City, where she doesn't have to suffer any consequences whatsoever. She's just hoping maybe she'll get maybe an extra 10,000 eyes on her failing show. And today, the judge, Schroeder, he just went after the media and how they're talking about this trial.
When I talked about problems with the media when this trial started, we're there in part, not fully, but in part, because of grossly irresponsible handling of what comes out of this trial. I will tell you this, I'm going to think long and hard about live television, the trial, again, next time. I don't know. I've always been a firm believer in it because I think the people should be able to see what's going on. But when I see what's being done, it's really quite frightening. Frightening, that's the right word for it.
And I think that is the right word for it. It is, in fact, frightening. You have people who are purposely taking things out of context. They are lying about what's going on. You had MSNBC that showed on-air live coverage of the prosecutor's closing argument. Guess what they skipped out on? The defense. They decided to skip out on that. Super curious decision, don't you think? Or maybe it's being driven in part. And by in part, I should probably say in most part. Their desire to keep certain information from their viewers so they can spin this the way that they hope. To be clear, this is much of it is spin. Much of it is spin. And it comes at a cost. In this case, it's a cost of more vitriol amongst people, more anger, and potentially violence. You've got the National Guard on standby in Kenosha. Is that fair? Should they have to be on standby just because a trial might not go the way that activists want it to go? That seems wrong. Should the businesses have to fear whether or not they're going to be broken into, vandalized, put on fire? Should the residents have to wonder whether or not they better get home before sundown for fear they might get caught up in a riot? That doesn't seem right. And that's the world that right now the Democratic Party has created. That's the world the Democratic Party has created, all because of the divisive rhetoric that they put trying to get people to hate each other on the basis of skin color. Huh. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic.
Heading into Shoreline, northbound I-5 at 175th, we have an incident that's blocking the right-hand lane in Renton, northbound the Maple Valley Highway after 140th. The roadway reduced to one lane due to an earlier crash. At Wendy's, try their brand-new fries for yourself made with real natural cut potatoes and guaranteed to be hot and crispy every time. These fries aren't an afterthought. They're fries you won't forget at participating U.S. Wendy's. You're listening to AM 770 KTTH.
If you missed my appearance last night on Fox News at Night, I hope you will text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link directly to my YouTube page where you can watch that appearance. I will be on the Faulkner Focus on Friday from London.
You're working in London?
I'm going to be at the studio in London.
Boy, you know how to vacation well.
I do. Except in that case, instead of getting up at 5 a.m., I will be in the middle of the day. It'll be the afternoon for me in London because they're 8 hours ahead.
You're going to use that joke on Faulkner, aren't you? Just to flex that you're in London?
Absolutely. It's going to say at the bottom, they can't pretend I'm in Seattle. Although they could because I'm just in front of
the green screen.
It's not a green screen. It's a TV that has just a backdrop of the city that you're in.
Or are you going to have the Big Ben one in the background?
I don't know the one that they would use. I am kind of curious. The one when I went into Vegas, they had the strip behind me. When I went on in Dallas, they had some photo. I don't know what the hell it was.
You don't know what the Dallas skyline is?
It was a Dallas photo. I don't even think it was a skyline. I think it was a bridge of some kind. And then in Tampa, I don't remember what
that was. It was a big picture of Tom Brady.
It was a big... That's exactly what... I thought it was a pimple, but it was Tom Brady's face on the screen.
Which is the best screen you've ever been in front of.
Yeah, I agree. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
We have a little bit of an update as to the Washington Supreme Court in their decision on whether or not they're going to reveal the identity of the six officers, SPD officers, who went to D.C. on January 6th. They weren't a part of the riot, period. They did an investigation, and it found that they were not there during the riot. They just went for the president's speech. God forbid a police officer go to a speech by a president that the left doesn't like. So after the investigation, they were cleared of any wrongdoing, and yet there were some folks in Seattle who wanted to find out their identity. The reason why they wanted the identity, they'll tell you, is, oh, well, because it's of public interest. Is it? I don't know what any officer did this past weekend, where they went to eat, what movie they saw in a theater, what they did. I have no clue. Don't care. Going to a political event is none of your business, and it doesn't have anything to do with their ability to do the job. They'll say otherwise. I disagree. I think their real intent here is they want to dox these folks, and they want to intimidate and harass and bully and basically get them to quit policing. And then on top of that, make it impossible for them to get a job in another police department purely because they don't like that they were Trump supporters. So originally, a King County judge said, okay, we're going to give out the names unless you want to pursue this legally, have until, you know, whatever the deadline was to put in a file. And so they went to court. The Supreme Court just said, we're going to continue this ruling that withholds this information pending a court, an earlier court, a lesser court, the lower court, looking at any potential further proceedings. So we'll say restraining order in place for another 30 days. So for at least the next 30 days, the identities of these officers won't be made public. It goes back to the lower court. They decide what they're going to decide, and then they move forward after that. Because a lot of this had to do with just the timeline and a restraining order that was about to go away. And so that's what they were fighting to. I mean, ultimately, they want to see this completely go in their favor. But that's what we are at right now. That's where we're at. That doesn't mean that they're all in the clear. But it does mean they get a little bit of a reprieve. Ultimately, the reason why this is so important is because the only reason they want to do this is to harass these officers. And it's in our best interest. It's in society's best interest to not allow activists to harass people out of a job simply because they don't like their politics. Simply because they don't like their politics. And if they're willing to do this to police officers, no, they'll do this to you. The accountant who lives in Bellevue, the dental assistant who lives in Enumclaw, they're going to do this to you. Your coworkers might do this to you. And that's not the message that we want to send as a society, explaining that that's okay, because it's not. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
We head over to Vancouver for the most adorable story ever.
You're a bad person.
No, this is adorable.
Yeah? Okay, yes. Go on. Tell me why it's so adorable.
Como says it's an act of kindness that went a long way at Pioneer Elementary School. The district, looking to get some better press, because the last time I talked about the Evergreen School District, it was about a teacher who was, I think, wishing death upon kids or something because of COVID. I can't quite remember at this point. I do remember getting a snarky email in response to one of my requests for comments. But now they put out a statement about a fifth grade student. Her name is Ivy. And she noticed that her classmates were a bit down last week. Little did she know that they were down because she was still in the class and they'd been trying to get her kicked out because she's just so insufferable. But she didn't realize that because she doesn't pick up on social cues. And so she was like, they're all so sad. What can I do to make their day better?
She doesn't pick up on social cues, yet she could recognize that all of her classmates were sad. Got it.
Yes, but she didn't know why. She couldn't figure out why. Even though I know it was Duncan in the background saying, we don't like you, Ivy.
That's what school Duncan goes to?
Yeah.
How does he commute all the way up to Seattle once a week for daycare?
Don't ask questions. So she presented each of her classmates with a rose and a beautiful, caring, and supportive message on it that in some places are actually missing words, and so Como TV had to insert the correct words that were missing also that it can make sense. It's so adorable. I've got one of the messages.
Okay, let's hear it.
And it just says it only in part. They don't give the full message because I'm assuming the rest of it was just gibberish. I just want you all to know that I'm always here to talk to. I empathize all of you. She meant with. I know what it's like. And if you need someone to talk to, I'm always available. Except to you, Kevin. I will never get over what you did to my doll that one day. You said it was just a joke. But adults say decapitation is no laughing matter. That ketchup that you used and I thought it was blood? Yes, foolish of me to think that a doll could bleed. But cruel of you to play that joke on me. Why would you do that, Kevin? What happened to you, Kevin? My mother tells me to show you empathy, that maybe you come from a broken home. That maybe you have an adult in your life who plays mean tricks on you. Maybe it's from an older brother. And I sat there and I looked at my mother and I said, you know what? You make a very good point, Mommy. But I love that doll and I love it way more than I do Kevin. And so no, Kevin, I will not show you any empathy. So no matter what problem you're going through, even if you wanted to apologize, know that I will never give you the time of day other than in this exceptionally long message. I went through 3 boxes of crayons just to get to this point in this letter. And know that I've CC'd everyone in this class so they all know what you did. But other than Kevin, everyone else, you can please reach out to me. Note that it's not going to be free, of course. I will be sending a bill to your insurance company if you are covered by your parents' insurance. And if not, well, I guess you better call someone else. Love, Ivy. P.S. The cardboard I wrote this note on is recyclable. Because I care about the environment. And I'm going to pay attention to those of you who throw this in the trash and not in the recycling bin. And if, God forbid, you were to do that, understand that I will haunt your every waking moment. Those eyes you feel are peering upon you on the playground, you get that uneasy feeling of someone watching you, know that that is me by the jungle gym, staring at you, judging you. Wishing upon you a kind of pain and suffering that you are delivering to those trees that so needlessly died because you were unwilling to recycle. Yes, I understand. I could have not written such a long note and probably shortened it down and maybe put it on typewritten paper and then put it like into little folds and gave it to you so I'm not wasting so much. However, it's the thought that counts. PPS, I've blind carbon copied your parents on this so they'll know. PPPS. I realize I should have not told you that I blind carbon copied someone because that defeats the purpose of the blind carbon copy.
You also said it was written on cardboard.
Construction paper, sorry.
How is she CCing and BCCing?
That part I didn't ask.
Oh, okay.
Combo didn't report that part.
Were you terrified to get a letter?
That was a partial statement.
Yeah, that was a snippet of it.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
According to the district, Ivy's classmate said that this act made them feel cared for and important because their parents don't care for them apparently at all. So thank you, Ivy.
You know what? Kids aren't half bad.
I mean, it was a little wordy, if I'm being honest.
Oh, so you are going to critique it?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of felt like she was just, it was all extemporaneous. She was just coming up with it in the moment.
Vamping?
Yeah, almost vamping. But I mean, I thought it was at least, there was some humor in Ivy's statement. So I give her credit for that, just coming up with it on the spot. It's almost like she's a professional.
And Ivy had nothing to do all day, so just figured.
Yeah, what they don't tell you is she failed out of the class because she hasn't turned in her homework assignment. She's spending all day writing these stupid notes. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message, preferably one that's not as long as her note. 1-800-465-877. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Some news out of Central Washington, where Congressman Dan Newhouse has stepped up and said, hey, I understand I can't get my legislation passed soon enough to impact the vaccine deadline that the president put on federal employees and contractors. I get that. However, I've got legislation that will allow the Congress to actually vote to save jobs next week. He wants to do that to create pressure for a change of policy. He's not going to be able to actually stop it via legislation, but he can create some pressure to tell President Joe Biden, who's suffering from tremendously low polling, in part because of policies like this, you don't have to do this. Listen to the people.
And I'm hoping not just here in the House of Representatives or the U.S. Congress, but also in the White House as well, in the executive branch.
Now, his legislation is calling for vaccine exemptions for federal workers who they identify as critical or essential. And he says it's just unfair that for the longest time, we told the frontline employees, these workers, stay on the job during the pandemic. You stay on the job at a time where there were no vaccines whatsoever. But now we're saying we're going to fire you if you don't get a vaccine you may not want or need. Someone who maybe had COVID, recently recovered from COVID, the data very clearly suggests they do not need a vaccine. They may still want to get one. Go ahead. I'm not anti-vax. I'm vaccinated. I want people to make up their own minds. I don't think it should be a mandate. If you want to do a testing option that you pay for, okay. That's something. But what they're doing here is just wrong. Now, at the same time, we got news from OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. OSHA was told by the Biden administration, you will be the ones who will implement and enforce my mandate on getting vaccines on the private sector. The 100 employees or the businesses with 100 employees or more are required to be vaccinated or get tested and show a negative test every, 7 days. If you don't, you get fired. If the business doesn't implement it, you get fined. OSHA, you're in charge. Go. And OSHA was moving forward with this until a court said, whoa, 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 slow your roll. We're not down with that. We're going to put a pause on all of this. And at the time that that happened, the Biden administration said, well, we still want you to go forward and do our plan. But OSHA is saying we are now ceasing everything. We're done. Until we get some kind of guidance from the courts, we're not going to continue to do this. Now, this does not affect that other mandate from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that requires employees of medical facilities to be vaccinated by December 6th. That is not impacted here. This ruling only goes to the private sector, non-medical businesses. So the court basically said, OSHA, stop it. And so they stop. Now, what does this mean? Is this as good as you might think on the surface? I mean, it's good. No doubt about it. Our friend Harmeet Dhillon, lawyer, has been on the show a few times. She said, everyone slow your roll as well. Again, they talk very hip both the courts and Harmeet Dhillon. Slow your roll, folks. She tweeted out just about 20 minutes or so ago. In effect, this is the government saying OSHA will respect a direct order. But don't read too much into this. Next step for the government is likely to move to dissolve the court order once the Fifth Circuit cases reaches the Sixth Circuit, where the lottery landed all of these cases. So they're just saying, okay, they're going to abide by the rule. You would expect that. The only people who tend to violate these kinds of court orders ignore them as if the justice system doesn't exist when they make rulings that we disagree with is the Biden administration. But OSHA is separate from the from Joe Biden. Still a governmental agency, but still. They're just going to move to not do anything. But now it's still going to go to a Sixth Circuit court. And doesn't matter. Let's say they come out and say, yeah, oh, yeah, we agree. Kill it. This ruling is wrong. It's ultimately going to get to the Supreme Court. It will ultimately get to the Supreme Court. And I don't know how they're going to rule. I know a lot of folks want to say, well, precedent. Look at the Jacobson case out of Massachusetts in the early 1900s. That doesn't mean anything in this case. This is a federal mandate. This is not a state mandate. And even on the state mandate side, that was something that didn't have a death rate of less than 1%. I don't know how this court will rule. I'm hopeful it will rule on the side of freedoms. But I don't know. We haven't yet seen enough from this makeup with this court to have any sort of general sense of certainty. We have a general sense that it'll lean in the direction of the right, obviously, but that's about it. At the end of the day, on top of this, you've got the businesses that are saying, well, what are we supposed to do? You told us we had to get this done under this timeline. Now you're telling us to pause, but you're saying, by the way, this pause might only be temporary. So what are they supposed to do? A lot of businesses are just going to say, we're going to continue to go down this path, assume that the mandate will be upheld. Otherwise, we get put in a really tough spot operationally. So we're just going to move forward and still implement the rule. And then, of course, what if the Supreme Court does take it on and say it's unconstitutional? Do the businesses then step back and say, okay, well, let's stop it? Or will it be a mixed bag? Most likely it'll be a mixed bag. There are a lot of businesses that are out there that are taking advantage of this mandate. They would want to do this anyway, but now they have an out. They can blame it on Joe Biden. Hey, Joe's making us do it. We would never do this for you. I know you're upset. We would never do that. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of this unfolds. At the end of the day, businesses should be able to do what they want, but ultimately people should be able to choose what they put into their body. I think the data makes a very, very strong case for why you would get the vaccine for most people, not all. But if you don't want to get the vaccine, in my view, I don't think you should have to get the vaccine. I would hope that you would talk to a doctor about this. Talk to your doctor, not some doctor you see on TV who happens to say something you agree with. And don't listen to someone like me who's not a doctor, even though I did watch the entire series of ER. I might be a little bit off. I don't take responsibility for any medical advice, of which I don't want to give.
Then why'd you give me all that medical advice last week?
I was trying to kill you.
Okay, well, it didn't work.
Asking, that's why. 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. You've probably seen some of the news stories. There's a brand new university. It's supposed to be the university that will push back against wokeism. It's the University of Austin. Joining me on the line to discuss the issues that led to needing a university like this is someone who actually knows a thing or two about the woke attacks on just about everything. He is the author of An Inconvenient Minority. He joins me now. His name is Kenny Hsu. Kenny, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason.
I want to talk about your book in just a moment, just because it's an issue that we've talked about in particular for sort of the Asian community of being basically at this point treated as white people. But first, let's talk a little bit about this new university and whether or not even having to come up with a university that's supposedly going to push against wokeism, doesn't that almost give up on changing the current university landscape?
Well, I mean, it's all about, I guess it's your flavor of the month, right? You can start, you need to, of course, challenge the institutions that are sacrificing excellence for the sake of whatever racial fad is of the moment. But you also need to start new parallel institutions. That's why the University of Austin exists. That's why I've been invited, actually, very graciously to lecture there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the way that I see this university and the board of directors who invited me, their main commitment really is to a core, extremely rigorous education of truly elite students. That means admitting solely based on excellence. And that means teaching to the highest standards that they could possibly teach you, the classics, the liberal arts, math. And I think that that's going to do more to combat wokeness, just teaching people actual objective facts and the truth. Than even the activism that we're doing in the university today.
What do you think is the actual market for a college like this? You know, oftentimes when we talk about younger folks, the tendency is to believe that they're all kind of already going in that direction of hyper-wokeness. And in a lot of cases, you know, as you know, they're now learning about this in high school.
Oh, so huge. I mean, the demand for this is incredible. I mean, you see some of these colleges like Hillsdale and Liberty University just gaining scores and thousands and hundreds of thousands of students. They have to just keep up. They can't even keep up anymore because, I mean, these parents have been noticing what the trends are. They're not stupid. They've been noticing, okay, maybe their kid started out a little progressive, but they come back and they're extra progressive. Or their kid started out, you know, actually appreciating their heritage, and they come back and they feel guilty because their heritage is white privilege or worse yet, Asian privilege. So I think that these are things that I think parents are highly in demand of. So I'm really glad it's starting.
Yeah, I am too. And I hope people turn to this. My only concern is that you're going to now have the universities that are already doing things the wrong way when they used to be doing things the right way. This is kind of it's not brand new of a phenomenon, but it's relatively new. My sense is, you know, the other schools will say, okay, well, you know what, if you want the non-woke experience, because we're woke, because we're better, we're evolved on these issues, you can go ahead and hang out with the University of Austin. That's my only concern about this.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, I agree in the sense that, you know, places like Harvard, Princeton, Yale, universities that, you know, we thought were centers of reputation, of centers of excellence, are now degrading in many cases. But I don't think that this is anything new. Those centers have been degrading for the past 50, 60 years. And you know, at some point you got to say you need to build up challengers to these places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these places just get richer and fatter and more bureaucratic, and less time, less money is spent on educating their kids. More money is spent on diversity and inclusion.
Yep.
And bureaucracy. So at some point you need to build an institution that really challenges them. I think this is the university that has the best shot.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is when you prove that there is a marketplace for this, it puts pressure on some of the other institutions to start changing. So
right,
I think that that's
exactly.
A big.
So you can You can impact them.
Yeah.
By pursuing your own system. That's what I'm saying.
I'm talking with Kenny Hsu. He's the author of An Inconvenient Minority: The Attack on Asian American Excellence and the Fight for Meritocracy. We're talking about this brand new, you know, free speech university. It's the anti-woke university, for lack of a better term. But I want to talk a little bit about the book, because it's an issue we've discussed and has taken deep dives on this show. You guys, or you as an author writing about this issue, is because you have experienced it. People who are Asian American have experienced this new kind of wokeness that now says you're basically white. All you guys are white now because you're doing too well. It is a bizarre sort of change in the way that folks on the left like to talk about identity and privilege.
Yeah, so my book, An Inconvenient Minority, it's called An Inconvenient Minority. It's an account of the consequences of wokeness. Okay, so wokeness basically is an obsession, a fixation with racism, and a determination to try to elevate the idea that America is systemically racist in the national discourse. Well, when you build a policy off of that, you have, say, an anti-racist admissions policy, like all of the Ivy Leagues do. You basically have to start admitting on the basis of race and background instead of admitting on the basis of merit. And Asian Americans, you know, the nation's the minority that is actually achieving the most academically and has nothing to do with their race. It has everything to do with their culture.
Yes.
And their values and their teaching preparation. The fact they study twice as many hours as the average American are unfairly penalized because of this anti-racist admissions program that now says, hey, there's too many of you. We need more equity, so we need to lower your population so we can advance other people's populations, even though they're not necessarily as qualified as you guys.
Yeah, and all you have to do is look at the underlying reasons, which you just outlined, and instead of punishing groups of people because you've been successful, we're holding groups back in order to give someone else some room to grow, rather than simply say, hey, let's learn from that and let's apply it to different groups of demographics or just people in general. I mean, across the board, if we were to change the way that we approach teaching and learning and we focus a little bit more in certain avenues rather than pushing the touchy-feely stuff, you're going to see growth. But what's frustrating to me, because this happens to the Jewish community as well, we are too successful, and thus we are then just seen as white. And then you're not really helping Black or Latinos, you're just hurting the Jewish or Asian community that you're just pretending is no longer a minority.
Well, I'll tell you the people that wokeness helps, and this is why they do it. See, admitting people who are not qualified into university doesn't actually help them grow. What it helps them do is helps them accrue victim capital, because now your race is worth something. Now you can go and parade it around and you can say, hey, my race means I get preferential treatment here, preferential admissions there. That's what it means. It doesn't help a person grow. It actually indulges them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it comes at the expense of people who worked really hard to deserve their spot. The Jewish community is really interesting because the consequences that are facing Asian Americans right now in terms of destroying their excellence, I mean, it happened in the Jewish community before back in, you know, the 1920s, but for a whole set of different reasons. But now, you know, the point of what wokeness is ultimately it's going to turn our country from a country where we treat each other based on character and merit to a country where we treat each other based on background. And that's the end of the American dream.
Yeah, 100%. It is so incredibly demeaning as well on top of that. And here's my last question for you. Why is it that you think folks who are not white, so minority communities, why do you think they seem to play into buying this kind of nonsense? I think you and I are probably the exceptions where I'm assuming you feel it's as demeaning as I do and damaging, but it feels like we're in the minority.
Well, I'll tell you why, because every, you know, 4 years or so, usually during an election cycle, these articles and these movements come out framing minorities in terms of victimhood.
Mm-hmm.
Black Lives Matter, Stop Asian Hate happened this time as a way to try to get Asians to get in line, basically, because, of course, the target was white supremacy with Stop Asian Hate. Once it was found out, of course, that 28% of the attackers against Asian Americans were, in fact, Black, 25% were white, of course, the narrative died down there. But every 4 years, people play identity politics. And for people who are yet uneducated or uninitiated to the world of politics, it is very powerful to look at somebody who says, oh, we need more people who look like you, you're a victim of racism, speaks and exploits all of your deepest fears and anxieties, you say, okay, fine, I will vote for the Democrat or the leftist politician there. But it's really not going to help you in the long run.
Yeah, 100%. I hope people check out the book. It's called An Inconvenient Minority, The Attack on Asian American Excellence and the Fight for Meritocracy. Check it out. It's by Kenny Hsu. Kenny, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciated the conversation.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.